Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, author and Broadway director Shelley Williams discusses her children's picture book, Your Legacy, a bold reclaiming of our enslaved history, with journalist Ariane Nettles. This conversation was recorded live at the American Writers Museum on May 15th, 2022, as part of the inaugural American Writers Festival. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
Welcome to this program of the American Writers Festival. My name is Courtney Borjas, and I am a program coordinator here at the American Writers Museum. I'm here to introduce to you our guest for our next event today. Shelley Williams is a Broadway director committed to cultivating new musicals and devised work. She's directing the upcoming Broadway revivals of Aida and the Wiz, and as well as the premieres of Mandela the Musical and Indigo. She has a long history of work on Broadway in Rent, Aida, and Motown the Musical. Passionate about pairing social justice with the arts, Shelley is on the steering committee of We Stand United and is a founding member of Black Theater United, an organization committed to dismantling systematic racism on our streets and stages. She's the author of Your Legacy, a new children's book that invites readers to reclaim African American history. She's here today to discuss it with journalist, editor, and educator Ariane Nettles. Please join me in welcoming Shelley and Ariana.
Thank you so much, and I absolutely had to bring this gorgeous book up here. When it arrived at my doorstep, I was so very excited to see it. And of course, you know, the name of your book is Your Legacy, A Bold Reclaiming of Our Enslaved History. And you wrote it along with, this gorgeous book is illustrated by Tanya Engel, so definitely want to make sure that we mention her name. So when you thought to do this book, I know that it kind of originated from a need that you personally had when talking with your daughter. So can you talk a little bit about how that started for you?
Absolutely. The origin story of the book actually started at Passover. My husband is Jewish, and I was sitting at Passover with his family, and they were talking about their enslaved history as their Jewish slave enslaved history. And after about 2 or 3 years of doing Passover with the family, I thought, why am I not having this conversation with the kids about their African American enslaved history?
Yeah.
And I realized that I didn't know how to have it, and that it caused me so much pain and so much shame that I needed to have that conversation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I realized that they deserved to hear it from me. I didn't want it to hear from school for the first time, and I wanted them to have an open dialogue about it. And so I started doing a lot of research, and the conversation that I was really afraid to have became a conversation I couldn't wait to have.
Wow.
Because the story is filled with so much joy, so much resilience, and I realized that this is a story I must tell my kids. So I wrote the book.
So what was that shift like? Because I think we'll get into your wide variety, many of the ways that you are a storyteller in your career. But as a storyteller, I know I often have that period where I'm starting to do something and I'm like, this is really tough and I don't know if I want to do it. Like I said, I wanted to write this thing, but I don't know. And then you have that shift where you become so excited to tell that story. What was that like for you? And was there any maybe particular thing that you learned where you said, okay, no, now this is something exciting that I know I can do and I'm excited to tell?
Yeah, I had a lot of aha moments. Okay. One, the first one was I didn't know how to begin the book. And then I realized that the first line of the book is, your story begins in Africa. Mm-hmm. And I realized this whole time we'd been telling stories about enslaved African Americans. We always started on the shores of the Americas.
Yes.
And we denied the lives that they had prior to coming here. And I realized that if we actually begin with their lives when their families were connected, with them thriving in their own cultures, speaking their own languages, then it connected so many dots for me about what I found out when I started researching more. You know, when I saw pictures and I saw movies of African Americans speaking broken English, I thought they were ignorant. it never once dawned on me that they spoke other languages fluently. And so I got really excited to tell that story because I didn't know that in my late 40s when I was writing this book. And it changed the way that I saw them.
Yeah, yeah.
To know that they were expert farmers in West Africa made me understand the expertise that they brought to America. True expertise that grew this country. And suddenly I had so much pride in what they did and the value that they brought here in their genius, in their excellence. Yeah. And that wasn't the story that I was told.
Yeah.
I saw people in chains speaking broken English and with lashes on their backs.
Yeah,
and, and I did not think about who they were, only what was done to them. So this book is about who they were. It's a celebration of their resilience and their ingenuity and their creativity and their grace and their dignity.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you bring up a really good point about us being learning more and teaching ourselves more as adults, because even perhaps what we learned as children often wasn't as detailed. I'm thinking about like when we would spend days watching Roots, like, you know, at the end of the school year. And it, a lot of it became kind of jokes, you know, like funny things that, you know, as a kid, you may think is hilarious as how something is, but you're not necessarily getting some of that context that can help make you proud, which is why you hear so many people now as adults saying, I don't want to hear any more slave stories.
Right.
I don't want to hear any more about the pain, because we are not used to maybe having pieces of story, pieces of literature, different stories that can kind of celebrate that. And I know that you've also been very clear that you do not say that this is a story about slavery, that this is a story about ancestors. Can you talk a little bit about how that approach is perhaps different to maybe some of the other stories we've seen?
Absolutely. You know, I do believe, you know, we can hold multiple truths. So we can tell a story from many different perspectives. Mm-hmm. I wrote this story as a first introduction.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't the whole story. And as my children grow, the way that I talk to them about enslavement will grow.
Yeah.
But I had no way to begin.
Mm-hmm.
So this book for me was an introduction. And then as they can handle more, I can deepen the story with them.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I think one really amazing thing that has we've seen over the past couple years is how when we talk to children about our history as African Americans, not just, you know, to us, but about us and about the people who came before us, there's a bigger emphasis on how there that is a culture. You know, I think that many of us have sometimes felt kind of odd when, you know, you are in school and you're talking about, well, what is your history? What is your culture? And of course, many of us, no matter how hard we may try, we will likely never know perhaps where in Africa some of our family members originated. And it's likely that by this point, we have probably have people in our ancestral line that have been from all over the place, as people marry people and other people marry other people. So what do you want your daughters to know about their ancestors? Like, what do you want, how do you want the story of our ancestors to kind of empower them as people who have this long tradition in the United States, as well as, of course, our origins in Africa?
So I did my ancestry, and I really did think that when I opened this envelope, I was going to get this incredible aha moment where all the pieces were going to come together like a movie, right? I was going to open this envelope and my whole history was going to somehow empower me. And I opened it up and I saw that I'm from Cameroon. And I did not feel more whole. I was like, all I got was a place.
Yeah.
And I got a couple details about a couple people, but there were still so many holes in the narrative of the of our history. And I had to tamper my expectation. And when I was writing this book, I was thinking a lot about how to frame the ancestors, because I wanted to do a family tree. And when I was in junior high school, we did a family tree. It was an assignment. Mm-hmm. And I did it, and I was so proud of it. And they posted all of ours on the wall. And mine was the smallest of all of my classmates. And I realized I could only go back so many generations. And it was a pain that I couldn't quite, you know, like I've never quite gotten over. Yeah. So in this book, I was like, how can I create a family tree that feels empowering? Mm-hmm. And I grappled with that for a long time. Yeah. And, you know, a part of me was like, do I put my names of the ancestors that I know and make up others? And then I realized even the names of my own ancestors are not the names that their parents would have given them. Mm. Giving someone a name is so intensely personal, and taking it away is a real erasure. So I didn't want to put names in the book. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized that maybe we've been looking at this tree backwards. It isn't about the branches, it's about the roots. Mm. And the last page of the book is my version of a family tree, which is the qualities that our ancestors have passed down to us. And to me, the love, brilliance, ingenuity, courage, strength, intellect, determination, dignity, and grace are our roots. We are the manifestation of their struggles. Mm-hmm. We are their dreams come true. We are here because they survived. And that is a beautiful continuation of their story. So I think of their story with a joyful ending, mm-hmm. as long as I'm continuing to pass it on. And I'm raising my children with all of the qualities that they have passed down to us.
Yeah. And I love how, you know, you just pointed out those very strong words. I think especially, you know, when we're talking about children's books, the ability to use strong language that they understand, you know, because I think that if I'm reading this to even a 3, 4, 5-year-old and we say the word ingenuity, that is something that we can teach them if they don't know what it means already. You know, I think I was drawn to how those words stuck out to me as I turned every page, and knowing that as a kid, they would have also stuck out to me, and how they kind of guide you through this process of learning from this kind of historical timeline, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I definitely want to chat about is that we sometimes, and I say we as society, have a tendency to talk down to kids, you know, think that they are not capable of understanding these complex issues, where I have found that especially children today, they are ready, they know how to have conversations, even conversations that we still sometimes struggle with. Mm-hmm. So how did you ensure that this was a book that was kind of having a conversation with children and give parents the tools to do so and not necessarily talk down to them as, oh, you won't understand these complex things?
I am amazed by the amount of information children can handle. You know, I look at it, you know, you go to a restaurant, you see a 2-year-old with a cell phone, and you're like, okay, you've put together this concept. You know, when you push this, this happens, and you get a response. Mm-hmm. I was amazed when my kids were younger that I could do sign language with them, and they would sign back, you know, whether they want milk or more. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that their minds work is pretty incredible. The conversations that I've had with my children have always been gauged by their age, mm-hmm. but also really pushing them to a point of curiosity. Mm. You know, I want to remain a deeply curious person. So I don't want to just meet them where they are. I want to kind of take them a little bit further so that they want to ask the next question.
Yeah.
So that they want to go further. So there are concepts in this book, and there's words in the book where they'll have to say, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then as a parent or as a caregiver or as a friend who's reading the book, you can then insert either your own stories into that, or you can pause and have a little bit of a conversation. But I really did want it to be an engagement.
Yeah. And it definitely feels that way. And so your daughters, they, you know, they were, of course, the start of this book and this idea to make the book. So when the book came out last September, this past September, what did they think about it? What was their response to the book?
Oh my gosh. They freaked out because their names are in the book. So they were very excited about that. And I had read so many versions of it to them, that for them to see the illustrations for the first time and to hold it in their hands, because they were just looking at mommy's computer when I was reading it to them, they hadn't seen, you know, Tanya's gorgeous work, and they pored over every page, and they would say, "Oh, that was the line that I told you." You know, they felt like they were a part of it, and they very much are a part of every single page. And Tanya's beautiful daughter Zoe is also a part of every page. So it was really exciting for both of us to share this with our children, and for them to share it with their friends.
Nice.
And the cousins.
Yes,
and
the, yes, yes. You know. Take it to school.
Yes.
That's amazing. Yes. And so I definitely, in a second, want to circle back to, you know, your career in theater. But in the meantime, I think probably many of us are wondering, how do you approach a children's book as an author? How do you write it when you have this wealth of information? Because you are writing to a very specific audience. Images are important in a way that they would not be perhaps in a traditional book. So what is that actual process, just in case if any of us are interested in writing children's books ourselves?
I'll tell you, my process was interesting. I had the idea for the book, and I'm a theater director, as you heard, and I went to, I told the agency that I was in, I really want to write this book. And they said, you should really focus on directing. And so I didn't write it. And like a year or two went by, maybe a year and a half, and I was being courted by another agency, and they said, you know, is there anything else you've ever wanted to do? And the little voice in me, you know, I had two voices. One was like, don't say it. And the other one was like, what have you got to lose? And I said, you know, I've always wanted to write this children's book, and this is the idea. And the person I told it to, their eyes lit up and said, oh my gosh, can I tell that to the literary person? And I was like, yeah, sure, what have I got to lose?
Yeah.
And then the literary person came in and said, oh my goodness, there's no book like this on the market. You have to write this book. If you get it to me by July, I will sell it by September. And I was like, wow. Are you serious? And it was such an incredible lesson for me, because I'd been rejected. And if I had listened to that person, that one voice, this wouldn't be here. I had to keep listening to my own voice. And I was so grateful that I followed through. And it was a beautiful process and collaboration of working with an editor. And I actually had, you know, I said to the literary agency, which did not have a lot of African Americans, I said, I really want some African American scholars to look at this book. And so they hired readers for me.
Oh, wow.
And I got incredible notes. I was like, if I'm putting this book out there, I want to make sure that I have done my due diligence and that everyone reading it isn't related to me and loves me. I need a real constructive eye looking at this book. So I got some great notes that did go into the book. And so by the time it made it into the world, I felt like I had it pretty thoroughly vetted. I felt like I had really pored over the words. When we looked for an illustrator, if you don't know the process of a children's book author and illustrator, the author and the illustrator never have a conversation. Never meet. So I looked at a bunch of illustrators, and I was like, oh my gosh, I love Tanya. And my priority for the book was, if I was never going to have a conversation with this person, I wanted the illustrator to be a Black woman.
Okay.
And a mother, because I wanted her to know why I wrote it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I had distilled it down to, I want Black woman illustrators. And I saw Tanya's work, and it was so deeply layered. It didn't feel like a children's book. It felt like a piece of art. And I wanted children to look at this, families to look at this, adults to look at this, and continue to see all the layers, all the many, many, you know, it's so deep, this history.
Yeah.
So I wanted people to come back and look at it and notice something they hadn't noticed before. Even something as simple as, I really fought for gold leaf to be on the front of the book, which is not something that's typically on a children's book.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I said, you know, we've been separated from the natural resources of Africa. Mm-hmm. And it will send a friendliness cue to African Americans who read this book, to see the gold on that book, the richness of Africa on this book.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful that Abrams said yes.
And,
you know, tiny details.
Yeah, and those things also make it very different. You know, besides just the, if you go into a bookstore with your kids, what they will actually pick up or what they will be drawn to, you also have kind of those subtle messages that it says. And, you know, I know we've been talking about like your kids, and I'm a mom, and I'm always, of course, thinking about Black kids, but I also am thinking about Black kids' interactions with all kids, and how a book like this can really be an educational tool. I actually did a panel where I moderated with some really cool kids. They were like 7 and 8, and these were some really smart kids. And it was around Black History Month, and I was talking to them about what do they think, you know, what have they been learning in school? And both of the kids said, well, I mean, what we've been learning in school is okay, but let me tell you what they got wrong. My teacher failed to say this, and then we didn't do this because I read this in books. And so, you know, thinking through how these books can actually educate all of our children, how to understand all of our history, how to celebrate each other. One of my friends, Jacoby Cochran, who's actually moderating another panel at this festival, I remember him saying that, you know, he wants everybody to celebrate all of our cultural milestones, right? We're in a city like Chicago.
Yes.
We have this amazing culture is everywhere, right? So thinking, you know, back to, of course, you know, you mentioned your children also have Jewish heritage, and they are in class, in school with other kids. Have you seen them mention any interactions with just all types of kids who they may have actually introduced to this book?
Oh, yeah. My girls are not shy about anything.
Mm-hmm,
so they're very quick to correct gendered language. They're very quick to, yeah, they're very quick because they have been raised in a world in which limitations have not been imposed on them. And so their liberation is somehow also mine.
Yeah.
As they remind me that I also can navigate this world as a person outside of gender, you know, imposing gendered ideas on that. So, you know, when it comes to enslavement, the way that they talk about it is through a lens of empowerment. You can tell the story of enslavement without impugning. You can tell it in a way that is celebratory of the accomplishments and the extraordinary intelligence of our ancestors. Their love, of their grace. That is, you know, that was so freeing for them to be able to say, I want to tell a story about Ellen Craft.
Yeah.
And they're like, who's Ellen Craft? We know who Harriet Tubman is, but who's Ellen Craft? They're like, she's a genius. Let me tell you how she escaped. And to know that they have a story about another woman who escaped. You know, they're to talk about all the amazing innovators, the inventors that we don't hear about. We're not hearing stories about Lewis Latimer. We're not hearing stories. There would be no light bulb without Lewis Latimer. You know, that we're not, so they're so excited to talk about the innovation, the genius of African Americans that often didn't get patents, whose families did not get the wealth passed down to them. But it did not, you know, as I say in the book, they could not take away their genius. You could take away their wealth, but the genius you could not take away. So it's really incredible for me to see them have such pride and be able to answer questions and yeah. bring something new to the table that aren't in the typical, mm-hmm. you know, five stories you hear at Black History Month.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm just imagining all the kids reading this and going home and telling their parents all that they've learned, and sometimes telling the teachers, which is also a great way that we can teach each other. Mm-hmm. We can learn a lot from kids and what they learn and what they listen to. So I actually want to shift a little bit to your work in theater. And I heard you say on an interview one time that you have come to the point where you realize that you are a storyteller, mm-hmm. and that will take place in many different mediums and a lot of different types of stories, but that you know that your role is to tell stories. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I had to really embrace that moniker when I wrote this book, because I know a number of children's book authors, and they've written, you know, 30, 40 books, and I'm amazed by them. And I feel there's something about a children's book author that I feel particularly close with, because they've been with me and my children. I just was, you know, saw Andrea Beatty, and I was like, hi, yeah. you've been in my, like, I feel like you've been in my house so many yeah. times. Like, it feels so comforting to know them. And I felt a little bit like imposter syndrome. Mm. I was like, am I allowed to play mm-hmm. in this yard? Am I allowed to do this? And what I had to do was kind of surrender to the fact that I too have a story to tell.
Yeah.
And that I have been telling stories in a different medium for a long time. And the thing that I do know is how to engage and who my mm-hmm. audience is. The thing I knew when I was writing this book is, you know, when you're deciding if you're going to write it in first, second, or third person, mm-hmm. I knew that I wanted whoever the reader was in the read aloud to be speaking directly to the child. Mm-hmm. So it's always you and your mm-hmm. throughout the mm-hmm. entire book. Mm-hmm. So it feels like a personal conversation between the reader and the yeah. child. And so I wanted my voice to be out of it. And for when you're talking to your child, mm-hmm. that it's just the two of you together.
Yeah.
And so I knew that as a storyteller. And that liberated me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's the same thing that I say to young people when I'm, you know, talking with them in their classrooms when I read the book. Like, you know how to tell a story.
Yeah.
You know how to tell a story about how you didn't break that glass. Like, you kids know how to tell a story. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Why you were late. You know, I'm like, you know how to tell a story. So, you know, whether you're telling a story on paper, yep. whether you're telling a story in your oral history, mm-hmm. the fact that you can own that, we all own that.
Yeah.
And the idea that we can collect our stories, that when we lean into with real curiosity and we're asking our family about relatives, mm-hmm. about moments, about recipes, about songs, that we are actually collecting these beautiful gifts
yeah.
that we can then pass on. And so I really encourage young people and, you know, people my age, mm-hmm. everyone, let's start learning our stories.
Yeah.
Let's start collecting these gifts, because those stories are our legacy.
Yeah, yeah. And I know you mentioned having a little bit of imposter syndrome, which, you know, I think many of us can relate from those times where you're like, you actually want me to do this thing, you know? But because we didn't specifically mention it when we started, you started as an actor and a mm-hmm. dancer, and really being an on-stage presence before you made a shift to directing and kind of writing plays. So what was that shift like? And does this shift into writing something that is like a print thing that you can hold, does it mirror that? Is it similar to that same shift, or did it feel completely different?
Every shift. So I spent 10 years on Broadway, which was incredible as an actor. And the end of my journey performing really came about because I'd always played an African-American woman in every show that I played. But I had never worked with an African-American director. And so I was always being told by white men how to speak, how to act, how to sit, how to stand, how to walk, how to dance. And I was like, wait, that isn't, like, 80% of that isn't true. This right. isn't what I, but I didn't have any autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
When you're an actor, you have to do what you're told. And
yeah.
so I realized I actually want to be the person I wish I had. So I became a director so that when I start telling stories that an African American woman can say to me, mm-hmm. you know, I have a problem with this line. And I can say, yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So I have loved being a director so much, mm-hmm. and it brings me incredible joy. When it came around to writing the book, I realized I had something to say. Mm-hmm. And when mm-hmm. you're a director, you're directing someone else's words. So I went from like not having any say to now telling somebody else how to do something else that someone else says to now have actually singing mm-hmm. my own words. So it's been a real evolution for me. And each one has its own power.
Okay.
And each one has its own, you know, they're all different in their own ways, but they're all really important.
Yeah.
You know, you may never know who wrote the words, but you might see the movie and love and mm-hmm. empathize with the character because the actress was so wonderful. You might see the play and be so moved by the direction that you want to tell that story, or it affects you so deeply you feel. You might read the book to your child, and that might be something that you cherish as a beautiful memory.
Yeah.
So the impact as a storyteller in all of those disciplines, I think, is not, one's not better than the other.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
been a part of my own evolution.
Yeah, yeah. And so I know that this book, Baby, is new, right? Just came out in September, so not many months have passed. But is it too soon to ask you, do you have plans for any more like print writing type of projects?
I do. There is going to be a board book based on your legacy. Mm-hmm. And I actually started my second book, and I was all the way through it. It was actually beginning to be illustrated. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, actually, I really want to stay on this legacy theme. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like when we think about legacy, we often think about it at the end of a journey. We think about someone's life and you're like, oh, this is their mm-hmm. legacy. And so I am almost done with my second book, which is for a little bit older readers. But it really is this idea that your legacy begins with your acts of kindness. Mm. And that the thing that someone could remember is something that you did when you were in the second grade.
Yeah.
That your legacy begins at any age.
Yeah.
So kind of planting the seed that we are creating our legacy from our very first beginnings of kindness is what my next book is about.
So what age range would you say that might be? If somebody has slightly, you know.
Well, the next book I have, it's about a little girl who wakes up on her 8th birthday.
Okay.
So that's the,
gotcha.
That's where I'm setting it. We'll see, you know, after it goes through the editing process a thousand times where we end up.
Yeah. But
that's
and the board book will be for toddlers.
Babies.
Yeah, yeah, for the babies. Yeah. Oh, I love it. I think it's important when we think about growing with a book and growing with our favorite authors and with our favorite stories and being able to kind of target that. I think we've seen that with like Born on the Water, like kids getting that version and the adults getting the 1619 Project book. And so kind of how these books pair together.
How we speak to each other. I'll tell you something that when I was interviewing with different publishers, something they told me at Abrams, which really kind of blew me away, is they said there are certain books that you give to kids. There's like three books that you often give to kids at graduation. Mm-hmm. And they said, we see your legacy being a gift that you would give to a child at graduation.
Oh yeah.
And that really struck me. And as I was going through, you know, the final editing process, I thought, could you read this to an 8-year-old and an 18-year-old? Mm. Would an 18-year-old take these words? Mm-hmm. And does it feel like it could fit both of them? So I was mm-hmm. really thinking about, could it be empowering through a life?
Yeah, yeah. And something to pass down. Yeah. So, you know, we have our favorite books. My cousin just had a baby, and I remember we were going shopping, and she went to look for a book that her mom had read her mm-hmm. when she was a baby. And so we have these fond memories and these connections. We're able to pass it down to our children, to our mentees, to our cousins and nieces and nephews, and all of the little people in our lives who we love so much. Yeah, yeah. So I want to make sure that we don't miss this, because yes, you are in Chicago today talking about this book, but you're going to be coming back here and you're going to be spending a lot of time with us this summer. So can you talk a little bit about what's coming down the pipeline?
Yes, I'm going to be back in Chicago at Chicago Shakespeare The beautiful book, The Notebook, is turning into a musical, and I'm co-directing that with my dear friend Michael Greif. So it will be making its world debut at Chicago Shakespeare in September, and so I'll be here for a couple months, and I love Chicago. My best friend is here, Suzanne, and I got married in Chicago on her rooftop, so I do love Chicago a lot.
Oh, that's so great. And I will just, you know, let you know that the last time I saw a musical at Chicago Shakespeare's Theater, I saw it 3 times and I now know every word. So I am looking forward to doing the same with The Notebook. I guess my last official question for you here would be, what do you want parents and, or any guardian, right? Grown-ups, I try to work on my language and say, you know, I'm always like kids and they're grown up, right? Yeah. And that can look many different ways. So us as grown ups and our favorite kids that we love, when we read this together, what should we take away from this? What should we walk away after we read this with our kids?
I always think of books as gifts. And I think it's a time for connection. It's such an intimate thing to share a book with mm-hmm. someone. And so I hope that the book opens doors to conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope that by the end of this book, you're beginning your own journey and that it's opening a door to that. So I always think about, you know, when I read the book, that the end of this book mm-hmm. is the beginning of, did I ever tell you about when grandma mm-hmm. or when uncle or when, like, that's my hope for the book mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. is that it leads to an end. And I have loved watching kids pour through it on their own. You know, I've been, you know, at the library and seen mm-hmm. someone pick up the book, which is such a crazy, amazing feeling. Yeah. And then I'm kind of like stalking some weird kid. And they're like, who's that lady?
Like, right, you're like, you like that book.
And
I'm like,
and they just, I watch them like look at the words and look at the pictures. And I just think, you know, I wanted every single one of those words and those pictures to be yeah. empowering. So I think about like, what is the energy jumping off the page and how does it make them feel? And is it bringing them joy? Is it making them curious, which is my very favorite word.
Yes.
So that's my hope for the book.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I was going to say, what a beautiful way to end that program. Thank you to all our program participants for being here today and for allowing us to celebrate American writing safely and in person. You guys, again, can help me thank Shelley and Ariane.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, singer-songwriter Ingrid Michaelson and screenwriter Becca Brunstetter discuss the process of adapting The Notebook, the romance novel by Nicholas Sparks, into a musical for the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.